Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here at another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. I want to first thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up, and I also, again, want to thank you loyal listeners for joining me here, listening, the feedback that I'm getting, and the guests that are contacting me with an interest to be on the show. I really appreciate that. Those of you that know me know that I enjoy doing this, and I enjoy spreading information to help others learn, become encouraged, and to put resources out there. So with further ado, I want to go into the show. And today's show is entitled Loving Yourself. When it comes to love, many were taught how to love others. However, the one that most often gets neglect is oneself. Even though it sounds simple to love yourself, for many this can become very complicated. This can lead to having symptoms of depression, anxiety, relational issues, and a low self-esteem. Love is often viewed as an emotion. And I like when Tina Turner said, "What love got to do with this?" Love can be used as a noun, a verb, or perhaps an adjective. It is something that must be practiced, as one must first love oneself first instead of loving the idea of waiting others to love them. One can love oneself by embracing, accepting oneself, including all their imperfections. And as I'm reading this, every time I type, I see more imperfections. When one loves oneself, life can become lighter and simpler. One will gain more stability and, most of all, become happier. Now, I have two individuals online, so I want to first hopefully log on to our guest. And her name is Karen Nance. Let me log on.
I'm here. Karen Nance.
Radio.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Yes, I'm here.
You know what, Karen? I appreciate you. But you know what? I should have had you on the show a long time ago for a whole lot of stuff when I saw your bio. So let me tell the listeners who you are. Now, Karen has been a child support attorney since 2000. She was previously employed as a criminal defense attorney for 12 years. She received her BA from the University of California in Berkeley in rhetoric and her GD from Temple Law School in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She has been a private investigator since 2008. She's received training from 2011 to 2016 in family mediation, parenting coordination, and restorative practices. In 2017, she's received training with Insight in Prison Projects, which is an IPP, Restorative Justice Agency in San Rafael, California. Karen has been trained in IPP, Victim Offenders Dialogue Training, and their Victor Offender Educational Groups. Karen is a public speaker and currently working on her grandmother's biography. She lives in San Francisco Bay Area and enjoys writing, traveling, and spending time with her family and friends. And I, with all of that, I want to thank you for accepting the invite, especially after I saw your Facebook or your YouTube meaning being 60 Instilettos. So I'm going to log the other person on, too, and we're going to get started with the show. Katie, are you there? Okay, I just logged her on. Okay, Karen. Karen, I have some questions for you. First of all, ma'am, tell us how you came up with the concept of stilettos at 60.
I'm actually 5'10" tall and grew up in an era where being tall was not popular. It was the boys always chose the shorter girls, and so when I became of age, I still wore my flats and was very uncomfortable at being tall, and I was skinny and awkward growing up, and I was the one who would try to stoop and cower when entering a room. I didn't want to be noticed. And that persisted through most of my life, actually. And I got married for the first time at 40. That was a failed marriage. And when I was 50, I met a coworker who encouraged me actually to wear stilettos. And he said, if you elevate your altitude, that'll elevate your attitude. And so I just turned 60 this year. And so I wanted to celebrate that and came up with the tagline, Stilettos at 60, because you can be whatever you want at any age.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so cute because, like I told you, I was, when I was young, it seemed like I was real tall because I was like 5'5 in the sixth grade. And I didn't grow that much since then. I stayed 5'6 for a long time. And I think I'm only 5'7 because my head got big. So. If it wasn't for that, I'd be in trouble. And I'm slow with it, so I can't wear high heel shoes. One foot go one way, the other foot go the other way. My feet be hurting. I came to work this morning. I was mad because the elevator don't work. And I thought about you. If I had on some stilettos, I'd be mad as hell right about now. I got my feet be killing me. So I just thought that that was so cute because I always say I had this little clothes that I like wearing. I say, I'm going to get back at you later. And I know I ain't going to never get back in it, but I keep, I be telling myself these things. But one of the things in talking about learning to love yourself, because that is something that a lot of not only women, but also men struggle with too. And sometimes they take it out on other people. And you had a career in law, an attorney, and myself, I was also interested in law. And I asked Teddy, was she there? I see Teddy. Are you there, Teddy?
I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Okay, because I'm doing a James Brown. You know how James Brown gets to calling Bobby? I'm calling Teddy. Teddy, you there, Teddy? You there?
I had my phone on mute. I apologize. I'm here, though.
Okay, so getting back to, like I said, with loving yourself and putting your insecurities on the table. So what I did, I kept looking at your video over and over and over again and writing some things down that I really want to talk to you about, and maybe you could help encourage a lot of the listeners out there because, like I said, I'm not 60 yet. I just stepped into 50s, and, when I was in my 20s, I said if I would have known that I looked as good as I did, I wouldn't have ate somebody. But I was hiding behind food, and food got me in trouble, and now I'm scared of the gym. But I keep hoping. People keep saying this vinegar water stuff, but it ain't working because that stuff is nasty. But, I gotta take my butt to the gym, and I just don't want to go. So tell me, even being an attorney, and you said some things about, being rejected, trying to go into law school, and a lot of times as we age, we give up. Tell us what made you first choose the career that you chose, and tell us a little bit about that process for you.
Well, for me, it's TV was a big thing growing up, and I watched Perry Mason, who was a white attorney, the criminal defense attorney. He had a private investigator, and he had a secretary, and he won all his cases. And being an African-American little girl, it didn't dawn on me that I wasn't in his league, but it stuck with me. I didn't realize that I would face obstacles. I just saw his persona on TV, and I said, this is something that I can do. And so probably from 7th or 8th grade, I just put that in my mind as something that I would do and persevered. I wasn't a great student, as I had indicated in my talk. I never was a straight-A student. I never excelled academically. I wasn't the cheerleader. I wasn't the popular girl. But something inside me said, well, if Perry Mason can do it, I can do it. And so I was able to get into undergraduate. And as I had indicated, I applied to 15 schools, 15 law schools, and I only got accepted to one. But I did get accepted. And so the problems that I had in terms of getting into more than one school didn't really affect me because I was able to get into that one. And once I did, I didn't have great study skills. So at the end of the first year, I had below a D average, so basically an F grade point average. And so The school had a program where students could repeat the year. And it was embarrassing because all of my colleagues, my classmates had gone on to the next year, the second year, and I was still the first year. But I didn't have – grew up in California, went to law school in Philadelphia. I had no other alternative. I didn't have anything waiting for me at home, so I just pushed forward. So I think that I don't want to say by default, but I just kept pushing forward because I didn't have anything to look back on. And so that was how I made it.
And what drew me to your story was it kind of reminded me a lot of myself. And I had a client earlier, and I was sharing with my client how a lot of times as a young African-American girl, we don't know our worth. We don't know our value. We underestimate our beauty and our talent because words are powerful in regards to some of the things that, you know, were said to us either by our mothers, by family members, by our teachers. And a lot of times individuals, they hold on to those words. And I was sharing with her how I remember, you know, I didn't know really what I looked like, still don't half the time. And my cousin was always the one that was, you know, biracial. She was beautiful. Everything was always dichi, 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 dichi. And when my cousin was chosen to be a cheerleader, she was pretty much telling the people, I'm not going to be a cheerleader unless my cousin gets to be a cheerleader. And I wasn't trying to be no cheerleader. I can dance. I'm slow-footed. I'm like big butt. She made me cheer, taught me all the steps, would work with me. And it was just so funny because I was like, I don't want to do this, you know. And so even though when you see this, and then like I said, even with I wanted to go to law school. I wanted to be a lawyer. But when I got a chance to go to law school, I declined it. Because I didn't want to study. I didn't want to read. And back then, you didn't have to have a bachelor's degree to go to law school because you was able to obtain your degree while in law school because things were different back in the early 90s. So I was like, don't want to do this. But, you know, but I commend you for that and to actually keep it going. Now, you said something in regards to elevating your life, and part of this has to also come with building your confidence. What made you build your confidence in order to strive towards elevating your life?
I think it was the support of others. Sometimes, a lot of times, others see things in you that you don't see in yourself, gifts and attributes and positivity that you don't see in yourself. And I was at the point, I look at stilettos at 60 as more of a, not as an actuality, but as something to have an illusion of in terms of literally, do I wear stilettos? Do I wear them 24/7? No, how about 24 minutes? But it's more to, because they're not that comfortable. But I thought that having that portrait of myself as I never envisioned myself growing up, who at 5'10 would wear 6-inch stilettos to attract attention? And it's not about attracting attention. It's about, because loving yourself isn't vanity, it should be sanity. And I had come across that quote by Katrina Mayer in that we need to do what's best for us. And honestly, it wasn't until after 50 that I started feeling confident in myself. Yes, I had a law degree, but it didn't define who I was. And I would never tell people that they'd say, what do? I say, I work for the county, because I never wanted a label people to identify me based on a label. And so I think that it's the beauty of getting to 60 is I had a journey, and it wasn't until after 50 that I started loving myself for a lot of different reasons.
I got one more question, and Teddy, I'm going to let you chime in. You mentioned something about being vain, And many individuals know that the name of the show, well, Precious Predicaments, Precious was my mom's nickname, and she passed away at 59 of breast cancer. And my mother was very vain. I mean, very. And I think that was kind of one of the things that kind of turned me off of, as far as beauty and fashion and all of that stuff. And my mother used to always, when we were teenagers, wanted to shop at Frederick's of Hollywood. And I used to call that store the whole store. I used to be standing outside the store crying, about, I don't want to go in the whole store. I don't want to go in the But even though I could be plain Jane, I love sexy lingerie because of that image, because I was always afraid to go in the home store. You know, even when I go in Frederick's, I mean, was it not Frederick's of Hollywood, but Victoria's Secret, I get mad because now I can't fit nothing up in that store. So, like you said, it's not about being vain. It's about confidence, because when you learn to love yourself as much as you want to be loved, you will see a big difference, because then people will start treating you that way. Now, Teddy, what do you have to say in regards to this topic or the special guest that's on the show with us today?
Well, thank you, Jeanette, for inviting me. And how are you, Karen?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. Thank you. I didn't get a chance to look at your YouTube video. However, I will. Sounds like it's very interesting. And I'm interested in, I'm interested in seeing what that is about. I, loving myself, I, on the other hand, was blessed a little different with having two men in my life that had from out of the womb, which is my father, and then my late husband, who I was with over 21 years, and now I'm widowed, that has always poured into me and taught me and showed me and modeled for me, even men, how a woman should be treated, that I am my daddy's princess, and I still am to this day. You know, I'm his sugar. I'm his princess. How my husband had always loved and adored me and treated and respected me as his queen and as his wife, and so for me, it probably wasn't as difficult as I became a woman and evolved into, you know, who I am. However, what did happen was because I was met my late husband at the age of 15 and got married a month before I graduated high school, and we had a great marriage, fantastic marriage, but what I found myself doing was neglecting self. You know, because I poured my life into, you know, my late husband and my children, and my whole life revolved around my late husband and children and his goals and his dreams and his aspirations. So when he passed and left me, and I got left with our two beautiful children at 9 and 14 at the time, I felt lost, you know. So at that time, that was my greatest challenge. Because I was a little green and naive because, again, he was a great man and a great husband. And so he sheltered me and he protected me, and my father did as well. So it was I was left here with my children out in this big world. But thank God, one thing I did do was I always worked and had my own career and, you know, was going to school to educate myself. So I did have those tools and attributes under my belt when he did, you know, when God did decide to take him home. But it was the biggest struggle of my life. And I found myself now having to figure this thing called life out that I had mastered as a wife. As a wife, I had it mastered. As a mother, you know, great. You know, but now who, it was my identity. You know, I had to figure out who I now am in the absence of being a wife. You know, in the absence of being, and he was a pastor, so being the Reverend late, you know, the late Reverend DeMarcus Harris's wife or first lady. Okay, now who is Teddy Harris? You know, and so that's kind of where I had to really start digging down deep and figuring out, you know, who I am as an individual, who I am as a woman. How do I really now love myself aside from this man coming home telling me every day how much he loves me and adores me and shows me that love? And my father, he's still living here, however, just not very physically present because he had moved to Hawaii. So that's what I actually dealt with as a challenge for the last, he's been deceased now 12 years. And thank God I have grown a lot. This world and people and experiences have taught me so much. I'm totally matured and evolved and grown. And, you know, it's amazing how the people, though, that are the closest to you, unfortunately and sad to say, sometimes are the people that are supposed to love you the most, hurt you the most. And I found myself walking, you know, walking wounded, I say. You know, and when you're walking wounded, it's those who are supposed to truly love you, be there for you, adore you, say they got your back. Those are the ones who are actually, unfortunately, sometimes, and I hate to say it in this capacity, but can be your worst enemy. And it was a great wake-up call and a shock for me. It really, really, truly was. It was those people who had my back that were associates or quote-unquote friends, and I wasn't at the time even really extremely close to them, but they saw my hurt, they saw my pain, they saw my passion, they saw my work ethic and my character, and that drew them closer to me to want support and be there for me. So it you know, it ended up to be a blessing. So that's kind of where I am today.
And you know what, Teddy, thank you for sharing that, because that kind of helps us in the show. We're talking about elevating your life, confidence, and this life transition. Now, I have a caller on the line, so let me log this caller on. And I want to read something that I found on the Internet, and it basically indicated, stop hating yourself for everything you aren't and start loving yourself for everything that you are. Because a lot of times we don't see in ourselves what other people see in us, and that's the beauty of it in this life transition. So let me log on this caller. Hi, this is Jeanette. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing? Okay, last number, it's ending in 2497, so they don't want to say anything right now. So we'll just let them listen.
Yeah, this is William LeGree.
I can't hear you.
This is William LeGree. I'm sorry.
Okay, William, so you're going to be the male on the phone with us today as we're talking about stilettos at 60 and elevating your life and life transitions. Now, getting back to the show, first of all, William, do you have any questions for any of us on the line?
No. I came in when I believe Teddy Harris was speaking.
Okay. And you know what? And this is interesting because loving yourself is not just for women. It's also for men as well, because men go through this transition too. And a lot of times men don't see in themselves sometimes, because I know, like, my friend is very, very handsome. And as handsome as he is, sometimes I'd be the one to pop him upside the head when it comes to his self-esteem and self-worth, because sometimes people beat themselves up so bad till they lack that confidence in themselves. And some of the things that, going back to you, Karen, in regards to what you talked about, was putting your insecurities on the table. And sometimes that put people at a very vulnerable place. And they feel that it's going to be sometimes used against them. And I like how you talked about how you strived at one point to fit in, even though it was awkward. And you talked about the fear of rejection. Let's give the listeners some information to try to help them in regards to, what did you mean by that in regards to the fear of rejection and striving to fit in?
For me, because I never had self-confidence, and I had initially a two-parent household, and my parents divorced when I was probably 7 or 8, and my father remarried. But I wouldn't describe my parents as outwardly affectionate and encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
So I never felt that from home. That I was attractive, that I was worthy. And I just attribute that to their upbringing and inability to communicate that to the children that they had. So for me, I was always looking outside. I was looking for gratification, approval, and that was in the form of boys when I was in grammar school and high school, and then men when I became an adult, always looking for that approval, always trying to appease someone. And it didn't end with that. It also included friends that I would have or coworkers. It's, what can I do to make them happy? What can I do to appease them? Because that's what validated me, and that's what made me feel important. And a lot of times that type of behavior or acquiescence causes a lot of pain and heartache and being used financially, physically, and otherwise. And so I think that not accepting that I was worthy and that I could have a contribution to this world really was a negative in terms of the bad things that happened to my life, but the flip side of that was there are good people in the world. So being so open and sharing and being vulnerable opened myself up to a lot of really good people. And so I attribute my contacts in a positive way or my accomplishments to those people that saw the good in me and didn't take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Karen, as you were speaking, and I just reached over and grabbed the book because people know I do not like to read and I need to, but it kind of took me to Sophia Nelson's book, The Woman's Code, and she talks about the powerful keys to unlock your life. And I'm a licensed marriage family therapist, and I have offices in Fullerton, Garden Grove, Huntington Beach, Oceanside, and I'm also in Marietta. And a lot of times when I'm working with women and I see these issues of low self-esteem, low self-worth, people-pleasing behaviors, codependency, depression, a lot of times it stems from relationships. And a lot of times it starts in the home. They watched other women, and it's really good for women and men to have a very strong role model or a mentor, because that also helps. Because one of the things, and as I was listening to you, I know with my mom, I looked at it like this. You can't give what you don't have, and you cannot teach what you don't know. So even though my mother taught us a lot of different things, she couldn't teach us how to love because she loved deep, and always the relationship she had was relationships I didn't want. And I've been married multiple times, and the one thing I tell my mother is I will have A through Z on my mailbox before I get dogged out by one. That ain't going to happen. My auntie said I had relationship ADHD. She said I get bored easily. And when people get on my nerve, you got to go. And if you eat my food, that's a wrap. You got to go. I would divorce you for eating my food. So I ain't playing with that. But I want to go into one of the things you talked about is relationships and chasing men that don't want to be caught. Because a lot of times we're drawn towards that. And, Will, you're going to have to suck it up because you're going to have to answer the questions from a male perspective. That's what you get for calling in. So you on here with three women, Will, so you got to help us out. So, Carrie, what did you mean by chasing men that don't want to be caught? And maybe Will could kind of help us from a male perspective in regards to what that's about.
For me, it was important to be self-sufficient financially, to have a career, and so that occurred probably late 20s, early 30s. So now I'm ready, right? I'm like, I'm done what I need to do. I can support myself. I've always wanted children. I'm going to do it the, quote, right way. I'm going to get married and then have children. And unfortunately for me, all of the men that I had contact with, and a lot had to do with, I'm sure, my approach and looking super eager, it was a turnoff. They got their one thing. They got the milk before the cow, and so that was that. And I never was taught. I never got that. You know, I never got that that wasn't the way to handle things. And so that's why I put that out there, is that no, I never realized after 1, 2, 5 times that that wasn't the way to handle it. That wasn't the way to approach a relationship. That was not the way to, unlike Teddy, I didn't have that great role model for a dad or in relationships, somebody that treated me like a queen. So I was the peasant, basically. And I just carried that with me because I never saw anything else.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's interesting because you got Teddy treated like the queen. You said you was treated like the peasant. I was kind of in the middle. I didn't want to be loved. I wanted to be respected. So, and I was a scary cat. And I saw how promiscuous my mom was. So it made me to where men thought I didn't like sex. They thought I didn't. And it wasn't that. I was just a scary cat. And what bothers me now is when I get these people coming to me saying, I liked you when you was in elementary school. I liked you when you was in middle school and high school. And I'm like, if you don't get up out of here, and there's this thing now that we look at is being equally yoked. To men that I would have been attracted to in my 20s and 30s, once I got 40 and I wasn't involved with anyone, and then I got married in my 40s, and then in my 50s, I'm like, no, I'm not doing this. Because you get to the point to where you're too old to be acting like that, but then it will transition us to something else, because I'm going to take you where you took us with your video. But I want to go back to Will. In regards to this, with women chasing men that don't want to be caught, tell us from a male's perspective in regard to this chase. Because a lot of women don't know what men want.
Well, women chasing men. I didn't have too many women to chase me. I wasn't that lucky.
But you got a gang of brothers. We should have had Slick Rick on the air because Rick loved this part.
But you know what? You shed a lot of light when you said about having little brothers. That gave me more perspective of what to say and how to narrow things down. I'm purpose and passion, like, you know. So I'm passion and purpose are same, just the same in the same order. If I want someone, I go after them. But if there's certain things that God matured in me, certain things to look for, if they're not all there, I just don't deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as a woman chasing, it's not wrong with a woman pursuing, because like the Bible said, when a man finds a wife, he finds a good thing. Sometimes he don't know he's there, so sometimes she might have to tug a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not being he may not be aware, but I think it's critical for a woman, and what y'all guys mentioned during your conversation while I've been on the phone, is for the father,
mm-hmm.
and would determine y'all, you know, the ups and downs of y'all struggle or your pursuit in life. And your encounters with men, the father is the foundation of women. And many people don't know that today. Women know it more than men, of course, because y'all guys may not share it with all the men. You know,
mm-hmm.
but you do your role behind pursuing a man, your interest in a man foundates from the dad, from your dad, and your
correct.
Experiences with your mom and
yep.
dad. And same thing vice versa with the young man or men, period. Seeing your mom and dad kiss and hug and things of that nature from the age of 3, 4, 5, critical years of your all our lives are what, 4, 5, 6, or 7, something
mm-hmm.
like that. Those, when you see those things, and those things are nurtured and kept forever. You know, just like
and you know what, Will, but this is a lot of times with men, I find that men become conflicted because some men, it's like the chase and the hunt. Some men find the chase a turn on until something turned them off, and when they get turned off, they don't always verbalize to the woman what it is. And then if women, most women are taught to be people pleasers, and then they adapt and they give to this man, and then they become disappointed later on. And it kind of goes both ways. And I find that, and even with being a marriage family therapist and doing premarital counseling, a lot of times I get people in my office and they had this attraction, or they thought they had this chemistry, but they still weren't equally yoked. And then a lot of times childhood trauma, parenting issues, all of this stuff comes to the forefront because it goes back to what they saw in regards to the chase.
And what they know is spirituality, and not being educated in God. Period. So when you was talking, what came to my mind was, what's a negative and a negative?
Mm-hmm.
A negative.
When you multiply it, it's a positive.
But
when you add it, it's a negative. The highest number, it's a negative.
Right. So that man and the woman is going to come out negative because the lack
mm-hmm.
of they both share that negative. In receiving knowledge and understanding of God. So when they don't have those principles, let's use the Hasidic Jews, for example, right? As
mm-hmm.
we all know, all you have to do is say what I just said, the Hasidic Jews. Soon you said that, you see, you may see black and white in dress code, but you see stability. You don't see a broken chain anywhere. You don't
mm-hmm.
see something that you could confront and take over.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's why from foundation, they have a word. They have a belief system. So what we're talking mm-hmm. about, what you just said, if you put that to what you just said, that's the only missing component that will bring balance to what you said.
Mm-hmm.
That's the missing component on the both negative sides.
Well, getting back to that in regards to, like I said, and I'm focused on this relationship, and for a lot of different reasons, it's because the relationship is also not only with your higher power, but also your relationship with yourself. And that's why loving yourself is so important, because when you love yourself, you forgive yourself, and you actually learn to be true to yourself, because that's very important, because a lot of times we've heard so many lies told about us, we've heard some lies told to us, and we don't know what to do with that information. And we have to basically reprogram ourselves in regards to realizing that we are valuable, we are worthy, and this person may not be the one for us, but it doesn't mean that there's no one out there at all. And that kind of, you know, helps, because even with parents. Now, I want to go to, and I'm taking my guest here because she did the stilettos at 60, and she talked about chasing men that don't want to be taught, and also this intense fear of rejection. But you also indicated, and I want to say, not only just being in love with your life and loving your life now, but you never know what you are capable of until you take your first step. What made you, because you threw out there the cougar, and when you start talking about a cougar, I thought about Vivica A. Fox. I thought about, you know what, I used to hear old individuals say that they age gracefully, especially women. They used to say, I don't want nothing old but money. So what made you go back to the drawing board and do the Stella Got Her Groove back, and hopefully he wasn't laying in the bed playing video games or eating cereal in your bed. So tell us about that, because you did, because we ain't going to even go into you being a, because you already was trained in law. You said you was a private investigator. You shared basically, and I put your information on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, so your video YouTube is all out there now. So it's out there. And
thank
it's funny
you.
Because you know what? When you put it out there, you have nothing to be ashamed of, and you keep it pushing, because people don't realize that most women, we could be the CIA, the FBI, the NSI, and everything else, because I did the same thing, what you were talking about. And it's funny because when you trained in those areas, sometimes men don't know how to handle that. They get scared knowing the women go find out. I was at the casino last night, and a person said, I don't need Google because my wife knows everything. I thought that was the cutest T-shirt. And he was standing next to his wife, I don't need to Google because my wife knows everything. And a lot of times people miss that. But when you are trained in those fields and you start seeing those signs, and you go, my mother used to always say, what's done in the dark will always come to light. I remember one time I came home from work early, and I stood in my room for over an hour. My husband was outside talking to somebody on the phone and didn't see me, looked in the house three times, and never saw me as he looked me dead in my face all three times. And I learned a lot of valuable information, especially considering that we had known each other since we was like 14 years old. And that was kind of like the straw that kind of broke the camel's back for me. But what is it, and when you talked about that, what made you build up your confidence to go into this again?
Well, I felt that I got out of my other relationship relatively unscathed, because I was 40 when I got married the first time, and I had worked for the same government job for years, and so I had my retirement and years of service and had a good income. My ex-husband wasn't working, so I was terrified, being a child support attorney, knowing the ins and outs, that even though I had my child, my children most of the time, that because my income was significantly higher than his, that I would be the one paying child support. A lot of people don't understand that or realize that, but that's actually the case. So when I was able to get the divorce and I didn't have to pay child support or spousal support, that made me feel like I was on top of the world. I said, there are a lot of people in a worse position. I actually had to declare bankruptcy. My house went into foreclosure, but I said, all that I've worked for with my job, and I can take care of my children. So that fact alone just elevated me. You know, obviously meeting someone that was interested in me at 50 was also a plus. But just knowing I could take care of myself, I mean, Teddy was also commented on, you know, she had her own career and she could take care of herself, even though she had suffered a huge loss of her partner. And I think that as women, it doesn't matter what career we embark upon, but the fact that we can take care of ourselves is something that we can take confidence and move us forward. And for me, that was the main thing. And I believe I would have been very bitter and angry if I had to pay child support or spousal support on top of going through foreclosure and bankruptcy and all of that. But I also realized that I would have survived. I also dealt with infertility issues when I was in my 40s, and I talk a little bit about that as well. But I think at the end of the day, we survive. If we can wake up and breathe and thank God for being here, we can make it. And so things that other people say, oh, my God, and believe me, there were people talking bad about me, you know, look at her and this and that. And Teddy spoke to that as well, even relatives that you would hope would come and help you and support you. But it's like, I am alive. And I, as long as God has given me another breath, I can make it. And that was what it was for me.
And you know, it's interesting because one of my marriages, I married a guy, and my family thought he was the best guy for me. And I don't date little men. Me and little men don't get along because I'll beat them up. And little man going to come to me, and I knew he was a little man. And I'd be doggone, and this was the best relationship I had had, but the little man had to be a bigger miss. He had a wife of 12 years, and I didn't even know until 3 months after we got married, and we dated for 3 years, lived together, and I never knew. And it was because once I found out, he didn't even want me to get a divorce. So I divorced him. He was like, well, I'll pay your mortgage. I'll do this. Just don't leave me. And then he wind up I got pregnant. It was a mess. And I just got my 40s, and I'm like, wait a minute. Lord ain't going to do this to me. No. So I was able to walk out without being bitter, tarnished, scarred, and kept it pushing, you know. And now I went back to work, and my people that went to my job was all at my wedding, and I had a beautiful wedding. And it was all a lie. It was all a lie because he was trying to be someone he wasn't. And all he had to do was tell the truth. He did not tell the truth. He was a pathological liar. Now, when you start talking about, you never, like I said, elevating yourself. I saw today when I was on the internet and I was looking at GMA, and there's a lady by the name of Bridget Nielsen. She gave birth at the age of 54 and opened up about motherhood and her baby now, and she's 55 years old, and her husband is 15 years younger. And one of the things she said is she has never been happier in her life. Now, in my 50s, I don't think I'm going to have no baby. Now, because I know when it came time for my grandson, I was in the courthouse doing a timeout when the judge was trying to give him to me for foster care. I'm like, timeout. I can't do menopause and baby at the same time, even though I don't know when the hell menopause is coming, but it better hurry the hell up. But the thing is, I don't want to deal with that. So let's transition into this life transition, because, you know, at 60, a lot of women, especially if we've lost our parents, our mothers, we don't have many women that's honest or really know about themselves and their bodies. So as many of us are aging and aging gracefully, we don't have nobody to talk to about, you know, once you go through menopause, once you become, you know, or if you're doing the fertility drugs, if you want to have a baby or you marry someone. Because I know my last husband wanted a child, and I'm like, no. He told me, I'll buy you a Jag if you give me a baby. I'm like, wait a minute, do the math. A JAG payment going to last about 5 to 7 years. A child going to be 18 years. I think, hell no, I'll buy my own JAG. Instead of on me a Mercedes. You know, but are you going to bait me with a JAG for a baby? Have you lost your mind? You know, so let's talk a little bit about that life transition. What was that like for you?
Well, for me, I consider myself a late bloomer because I didn't have my first child till a month before I turned 35 years old. And I was in kindergarten and wanted 100 kids. So I was one of those people that wanted a huge family. And that wasn't in the cards for me. After I had my first child, I tried, had many infertility treatments. They were unsuccessful. So by 40, I decided I would have to try something else, which is I've always wanted to adopt. That was one of my passions. So I ended up adopting a child from Ethiopia, but trying to go through the process, being 46 at the time, I was told that I was too old to adopt. I could only be 43 years older than an infant. I guess the thinking was that I would be dead before the child would be a teenager. And that just infuriated me that someone, a bureaucrat, would have the audacity to tell me, no, you're not a fit parent for an infant. So that fueled me. And I decided I don't have to use an agency. I don't have to go by your criteria. And I just went on my own to Ethiopia. I had all my paperwork in order and told my husband at the time that he was going to take care of the child because I wasn't going to come back without a child. And that determination, I wish I could get back, because I stayed there in Ethiopia for 3.5 weeks and came back with a child that was 6 weeks old, a son. Mm-hmm. And I have points in my life where I pushed and pushed and pushed because I was so determined. And so at this point in my life, where's that determination? Where's that fire that's going to get me to do whatever I want to do? And that's where the TED Talk came in, the YouTube talk, and I said, I've always wanted to be a public speaker. Why should I not do that now? I've always wanted to be a model. Is that something that I can do at this age, being overweight for what they consider to be perfect weight? And then I said, well, why can't we? Why can't we do whatever we want to do? I know, Jeanette, you're saying, I'm done with the kids, but I was a late bloomer, you know, and I said, this is what I want.
It's funny because I was at that point because I always, it wasn't that I was focused on career. It's just because I had such parents that just turned me off. I didn't want to do that to nobody else. So, and in most cases, we parent the way we were parented. So
right.
I was more career-driven, focused. I want to say selfish because I know I'm selfish with my food because my kids will tell you, even when I bought cereal, I hid my cereal in the room and put their cereal in the cabinet. So I didn't really want to share. So that was my biggest issue. They say sharing is caring. Sometimes Jeanette don't care. So I didn't really want to do all of that, even though I do have two children and they're adult children now, and I have four grandchildren, and I spend a lot of time with my grandkids. So, and my youngest grandson is 2. And last week when I was on the radio, this sucker went in the refrigerator, stole the sugar, ran with it like it was football, poured it all over the floor and put his foot in it like he was at the beach. So I don't have that kind of patience. So, and as we get older, when we mature, and I always tell my daughter, redirect his behavior. She'd be like, what you going to do? So I didn't want to catch a CPS case. So that's for me to do. And when they say, are you smarter than a fifth grader? Hell no, because these kids are smart. And I see what they parents, and I see what a lot of these kids. So I do better in therapy with children than I would if I had to take them little kids home with me. And I know that they are blessing. I know that. But sometimes I got grandkids, and they can be the grandkids from hell sometimes because they kind of like my son. So that's my thing. And when you were talking about the weight thing, I remember one time I had a doctor call me grossly obese. I told him, your mama. I said, I may be obese, but I'm not gross. So you get to the point to where that motivation, determination, you don't let nobody stop you from doing what you want to do. I was telling a person today, if God called me home today, I'd be like, okay, I'm good. Because I've pretty much accomplished everything that I wanted to do, and not that I want to die right now, but I've lived a great life. I've done and accomplished a lot of things that I never thought I would be able to do. But with me, I don't like being told no. You ain't going to just tell me no. And I know that television is on its way. I'm getting all of these phone calls from people wanting to be on the show and the emails and all of these people that I'm in contact with, which is a blessing. So that's why I'm trying to encourage and empower other people that you can do it. Now, people mm-hmm. have thought that I was an attorney because I could Johnny Cochran up on you in a heartbeat. And I'm like, do I really want to go to law school? I'm like, you know what, I really don't need to. But even when I had the job that I enjoyed, which was a court mediator investigator, and I was on my way to get my private investigator's license, I got terminated because they said it was a conflict of interest for me to own a company and an outpatient court-referred company and work for the courts. So I just kept pushing. So sometimes you got to realize that you may have your plan, but God got his plan. Mm-hmm. And I am far better off now than I was working for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we don't see it like that because we want that stability, which is kind of what Teddy was talking about. Teddy had that stability. And when that stability was taken up under her, feet, it's like, okay, now I got to reinvent myself. Now I got to deal with these transitions, and I got to step out on faith, not be afraid. Mm-hmm. When things come my way that don't look too promising, what am I going to do? And it goes back to that Gloria Gaynor, I will survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I want to go back to you, Karen, and you indicated something about being a shoeaholic. Now, I want to also say, too, with my family, for those of you that are out there listening, because I have females in my families, and my daughter and I, we're the shortest. I'm taller than my daughter, but I have cousins. My sisters are like 5'10", 5'11". I have cousins that are 6'1", 6'2", and they're very beautiful, very, very beautiful. I have one that's a cousin. She does comedy. I have another cousin. She's in the movie industry and done quite a few things. But I come from a female predominant family, and they're beautiful and tall, and they always wear high heels. And I'd be like, as tall as you are, what the hell are you doing with high heel shoes on? And I always found that to be very infatuating. But tell me about what you meant when you said you are a shoeaholic and basically stomping on fashion rules.
Well, I think the highest heel I had at 50 was probably 2.5 inches, and that was like a stretch for me. So now I've graduated to 4.5, 5-inch, 6-inch heels. So it takes some practice and to navigate, but it makes me feel good, and then I get comments from people, aren't you tall enough? And I'm like, no, I'm not reaching the sky yet. And there are other things that we're told, not just as black women, but as women, and especially as we get older. You know, if you go online and Google what not to wear after 50 or 40 or 60, there are all these rules. And so I took the time and I Googled. It said, definitely don't dye your hair black. And don't wear it long. It has to be neck length. And don't wear leggings. Don't wear jeans. Don't wear short skirts. I got the leggings and the jeans down. I'm not on the short skirt. I'm not doing that yet. Hopefully I get there. Don't show your cleavage. I'm like, if I got it, I can. If I got a push up, I'm good. You know. And don't wear high heels after 40. And so I felt like we were stamped. You know, like don't. Perishable, right? Handle with care, you know, or fragile. And I don't want to be considered that way. I don't look at myself that way. And so it was a push against the myths that we have, these fashion myths that we're not supposed to do this or we're not supposed to do that. So I said, well, I'm just going to crash them all because I feel comfortable. I want to feel that this is me, not this. Don't see Karen at 60, see Karen. You know, Karen in stilettos, that's who I am, because I'm going to elevate my life, not literally, but figuratively. So it's more of a figurative thing for me. All of us need to elevate ourselves, whether that's, you know, wearing purple hair, green hair, doing whatever we want to do. But life is too short not to take chances and not to have fun.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you were speaking, I want to say, first of all, like I said, me and Shoes don't get along. I could see myself on, I don't know if you remember the show, I'ma Get You Sucker, when he got out of jail and he was walking up with those fish tank shoes on. I could see myself down with stilettos, with my shoe heel, my heel breaking, and I'm walking up the side of his shoe.
But you're having fun, right? It's fun.
But I can't be in shoes, ugh. You know, and then as you were speaking, I was also thinking of, you know, being African-American, like they say, black don't crack, and looking and thinking about Tina Turner, Angela Bassett, Patti LaBelle, and, you know,
right.
in the later they was stylish. They went out, they dressed to impress, you know, and that's a beautiful thing because no matter how, and let's not forget Cicely Tyson, you know, so we have, and then I have Felicia Rashad, who's my girl, but we have some beautiful older, because I don't want to call them, because, you know, they say the new 60s is the old 40s, you know, so we kind of go back in time. But we have some beautiful women out there that have aged gracefully. And my mother used to always tell me and my sisters, take care of yourself. Now, she had this thing, and I'm going to put it out there. She used to say, don't let nobody F you in the bad health. So I kind of took that sexually, you know. But, you know, that, and so that means just because you ain't getting none, that means it will put you in bad health. But by that same token, you want to make sure you take care of yourself.
Right.
What would you say to your younger women out there who are in their 20s and their 30s, knowing that you are about to hit 60?
That it age is alluring at any age. That some people feel, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be 21, and there's a mark, and I'm not where I need to be. But there's always an opportunity that we have as long as we're breathing. I mean, the fact that I got my private investigator license at 50, and then I'm constantly trying to go into different areas and to show that I'm here for a reason. God put me here for a reason, and I'm here for a reason, and there's still room to grow. In fact, one of the women who saw my video, she was 30-something, and she said, I feel so old. I have four kids, and my husband told me to stop wearing heels because I was going to drop the baby and all this kind of stuff. And so it really resonated with me because I was happy that someone younger still, you can still feel old at 15. You can feel old at you know, at any age. And so it's more the concept of you have this image, right? Somebody 60, you see them with a cane. It's, oh, my gosh, that's old. I would have, when I was growing up, I was like, do people live that long? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that hopefully it gives people inspiration and they can live a thrilling and enticing life at any age. And so I had to embrace that because if God willing and I did make it to 60, I wanted to celebrate it. And I want to encourage other people to do that as well at any age.
Well, when you, because you said you almost 60, when you have your party, make sure you invite me and Teddy so we can come to your party.
Yes, ma'am. When I taped it, I wasn't 60, but I turned 60 in August. So I'm celebrating, so. If you have a party that out there, I'll come because I plan on celebrating.
We'll go to San Francisco, just, you know, so we can, you know, connect because you never know. You never know.
Exactly.
And we definitely appreciate you. But before we, because we got 2 minutes left on the air, I haven't even checked my emails because people keep calling me on my phone. And I'm like, why are you calling me on my phone? So, Teddy, do you have any questions for Karen?
No, I do not. Not at all.
William, do you have anything for Karen that you want to say? Because, you know, you're a younger man, and you haven't hit your 50s yet, and, you know, women are out there. Do you have any questions?
What's wrong with me being young? What's
for a mature woman who knows what she wants, do you have any questions?
I'm outside the rain. I'm sorry. I do want to ask your view on my comment regarding, like, when I use the Jewish culture in reference to foundation and the issues that we're talking about regarding men and women in relationship. I just want to – it seemed like after I mentioned it, I didn't get any views. Can she share her views on that? If you recall what I said?
views on an opinion as to the Jewish culture?
Yes. It's not more of, I don't think it's an opinion. I think it's a fact, because it's proven that, you know, in a culture that has that foundation, and some you could say the word religion, but that have a foundation of God in it, that has an order, they don't run into the same issues as common as people who don't.
Well, I'm not that familiar with the Jewish culture. I don't have a lot of information about it, but from what you've represented and how you've presented it, I would have to agree based on just the information that you've shared. So I think that's probably true.
It
I think any culture that has God.
Mm-hmm. I want to take it to, because when you talk about Jewish and we're not talking about relationship, but even going to the Bible and talking about a virtuous woman. And when you talk about a virtuous woman, and, you know, even though the Bible ain't talking about where somebody wearing stilettos, but it's having class, it's having style, it's having confidence in yourself and things of that nature, whether we're Jewish, whether we're Buddhist, whether we're Muslim, covering up ourselves, you know. So, but I want to take it, because I want to end it when you're talking about being fabulous and sexy. And for the rest of your life, make sure that you find whatever attainable goals that you have and never give up. No matter what obstacles are out there, no matter what people say about you, always remember, love yourself. Because when you love yourself, it will make you become more attractable, and people will also start loving you too, and it will radiate. Now, next week, I'm going to be having a young man on the air, and his name is Mitchell Levy, and he is an empowerment expert, and he's also a ghostwriter. And he indicates that he has the ability to make you an Amazon best-selling author and can help you write your book in 8 hours or less. So I know I have a whole lot to say. I can write about a whole lot of different things. I was telling my friend Talisha Berry, I need to sit down with her and give her some information so she can write some sitcoms or do some plays or do something, because she could be the next Miss Tyler Perry out there, because she's fabulous with her writing skills, and she's the owner of Courageous Woman magazine. So there's a lot of good information, a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good, powerful things. So join me next week as, like I said, I will have Mitchell Levy, and he's an empowerment expert here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. Now, tomorrow I will be on the air with Pastor Dan Estelle, where we do the segment from the pulpit to the couch, and the show is going to be a 90-minute show. And the title is The Holy Spirit Don't Lie. So, can't wait to hear from you tomorrow. And until then, remember, you got this. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Teddy. Thank you, Will, for joining me.
Thank you,
okay.
Thank you, Karen.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.